Humans like the idea that even when life ends, you have your own tomb where you can rest in peace and not be disturbed. We even have a term for that, RIP or RIP. But sometimes that peace is disturbed, and the results are terrifying. I'm Rishu Sheth, and I welcome you to Legend. King Tutankhamun, better known as King Tut, has become the world's most well-known Egyptian pharaoh, fascinating generations of scientists and students. Tutankhamun was born around 1341 BCE. During his reign, powerful advisors restored the traditional Egyptian religion and art, both of which had been set aside by his predecessor, Akhenaten, who had led the Amarna Revolution. The parentage of King Tut remains uncertain, although a single black fragment originating at Akhenaten's capital city names him like a king's son in a context similar to those princesses of Akhenaten. Medical analysis of King Tut's mummy shows that he shares very close physical characteristics with the mummy discovered in Tomb 55 of the Valley of the Kings. Some scholars identify these remains of those as a different mummy, who seems to have been corrigant with Akhenaten in his final years of reign. Others have suggested the mummy may be Akhenaten himself, because at his accession he was still very young. The elderly official A, who had maintained ties with the royal family and the general of armies, Horenheb, served as King Tut's chief advisors. Aided by advisors, King Tut reversed many of his father's decisions. Under his rule, Egypt returned to its glorious days of polytheism. King Tut unexpectedly died in his 19th year. There are many theories as to what killed King Tut. He was a tall but physically frail boy, with a crippling bone disease in his clubbed left foot. He is the only pharaoh known to have been depicted seated while engaged in physical activities like archery. Traditional inbreeding in the Egyptian royal family also likely contributed to the boy's poor health and early death. For many years, people puzzled over King Tut's death. Many suspected foul play. Others speculated that his death was an accident. However, almost a century after his tomb was discovered from the Valley of the Kings, scientists used digital imaging and DNA testing to suggest that King Tut was most likely killed from malaria or an infection. But with the end of one story, another one begins. This was just the beginning of the story, but the end of it is going to take place before the beginning. You see, scientists may have found out Tut's cause of death, but this only happened with Howard Carter and the most famous curse in history. The rulers of ancient Egypt, known as the pharaohs, were seen by their people as actual gods, and this reverence for them continued even when their earthly form inevitably died. To make sure that these beloved kings could more effectively make the journey to the afterlife, the pharaohs were carefully and meticulously embalmed and mummified, preserving their body forevermore, after which they were ensconed with extravagant ornate tombs. These tombs were loaded with vast riches, countless valuable artifacts, and often livestock or servants who were sealed away in the perpetual dark along with their master. Everything else the pharaoh would possibly need to live it on in the next realm. The tombs themselves were carefully sealed away to make sure that grave robbers wouldn't get in, sometimes even booby-trapped, as well as containing numerous false doorways or labyrinth passages that led to nowhere or sow confusion, and in some cases, the entrances to the tombs would be inscribed with powerful curses to bring down strife, misfortune, and death upon any who would dare defile the final resting place of the pharaohs. And King Tut wasn't even known until Howard Carter began digging and finding his tomb in 1922. Howard Carter was a British archaeologist and Egyptologist. In 1907, he became in his association with the 5th Earl of Carnarvon, a collection of antiquities who had sought out Carter to supervise excavations in the valley. On November 4th, 1922, the first sign of what proved to be King Tut's tomb, but it was not until November 26th that a second sealed doorway was reached, behind which were the treasures. Carter's diary captured the drama of the moment. After making a tiny hole in the doorway, Carter, with a candle in his hand, peered into the tomb. At the time, it was a marvelous and groundbreaking discovery, an ancient pharaoh's tomb that was still for the most part intact and free of any looting. The possibilities for what lies beyond that inscrutable thick stone slab were endless, and Carter immediately sent out for Lord Carnarvon to come join him at the dig to penetrate this long-sealed place hidden away from human eyes for millennia. That very same night, there would be the first in what would be a long line of oddness, when Carter was told by a panicked servant that a cobra had broken into the cage of a canary that the explorer had been using to gouge the safety of the air in the tomb and had eaten the bird. The servant took this to be a dire warning from beyond the grave and allegedly told Carter that this is the Pharaoh's servant and he is sent to kill the bird for leading you to the tomb. You must not disturb Pharaoh Tutankhamun's peace. As spooky as all of this was, Carter was a man of science and did not put much stock into the superstitious nonsense. He had the servant dismissed and awaited the arrival of Lord Carnarvon, while the media began to work itself into a fervor over the discovery of this long-lost and very much intact tomb that had been there sitting in the dark for thousands of years. On the day that tomb was opened, Carter began by poking a small hole through the entrance, through which he peered by candlelight, first eyes to meet what lies within for millennia, the first light to hit it, and stated that he could see wonderful, wonderful things. Carter and his team uncovered a treasure trove of findings, including religious objects, wealth, gold, paintings, statues, scrolls, and a gold-encrusted sarcophagus containing the mummified remains of King Tut himself. A rumor that opening the tomb was a bad idea and a curse might have been unleashed was brought to many people's attention due to the deaths of a few members of Howard Carter's team and other visitors to the tomb shortly after it was discovered. The first of the mysterious deaths was of Lord Carnarvon. He had been bitten by a mosquito, and later slashed that bite accidentally while shaving. It became infected and that resulted in blood poisoning. 2 weeks before Carnarvon died, Mary Corelli wrote an imaginative letter that was published in the New York World magazine, in which she quoted an obscure book that confidently asserted the dire punishment would follow any intrusion into a sealed tomb. A media frenzy followed, with reports that a curse had been found in the king's tomb, although this was untrue. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, suggested that Lord Carnarvon's death had been caused by elementals created by King Tut's priests to guard the royal tomb, and this further fueled the media interest. Arthur Weigall reported that 6 weeks before Carnarvon's death, he had watched the Earl laughing and joking as he entered the king's tomb, and it said to a nearby reporter that Tut gave him 6 weeks to live. In 1925, the anthropologist Henry Field, accompanied by Breasted, visited the tomb and recalled the kindness and friendliness of Carter. He also reported how a paperweight given to Carter's friend Sir Bruce Ingram was composed of a mummified hand with his wrist adorned with a scrab bracelet marked with "Cursed be he who moves my body. To him shall come fire, water, and persistence." Soon after receiving the gift, Ingram's house burned down, followed by a flood when it was rebuilt. But Howard Carter was entirely skeptical of such curses. He reported in his diary a strange account in May 1926, when he saw jackals of the same type as Anubis, the guardian of the dead, for the first time in over 35 years of working in the desert. Skeptics have pointed out that many others who visited the tomb or helped to discover it live long and have healthy lives. A study showed that of the 58 people who were present when the tomb and sarcophagus were opened, only 8 died within a dozen years. All the others were still alive, including Howard Carter, who died of lymphoma in 1939 at the age of 64. The last to enter the tomb after its discovery in November 1922 lived for another 57 years and died in 1980. American archaeologist J. O. Kinnaman died in 1961, a full 39 years after the event. The tomb was opened on the 29th of November in 1922. George J. Gold, the first, a visitor to the tomb, died in the French Riviera on the 16th of May in 1923 after he developed a fever following his visit. A.C. Mace, a member of Carter's excavation team, died in 1928 from arsenic poisoning. Captain the Hun, Rachel Bethel, Carter's secretary, died on the 15th of November in 1929 in a Mayfair club, the victim of a suspected smothering. Howard Carter opened the tomb on the 16th of February in 1923 and died well over a decade later on the 2nd of March 1939. However, some have still attributed his death to the curse. All in all, the curse of the pharaohs has contributed a lot to pop culture and scientific discovery. Although we can't confirm if it exists, it's still interesting to think about. We even do so today, as one of the most famous films is based on this curse. We all know it today as The Mummy. In the late 1800s, just after the gold rush, a German prospector named Jacob Waltz reportedly started showing up in Phoenix with a lot of gold ore. He reportedly said it came from a secret mine in the Superstition Mountains. I know, creative. Some might think that his mine was first excavated by Mexico's Peralta family, then commandeered by Apaches, or simply abandoned. What matters, though, is that Waltz wouldn't reveal the mine's location. Then, in 1891, he died. At the time, he was living in Phoenix, reportedly on land owned by Julia Thomas, a local bakery owner. They were friends, and he gave her hints about the mine's location. When Waltz died, the 29-year-old Julia sold her bakery, got a group together, and went searching for the mine. She and her team ended up passing over two enormous gold mines on their search for the Lost Dutchman mine, which they didn't find. Then, to recoup the cost of the failed expedition, Julia started selling maps that she claimed would lead people to the mine. As you probably guessed, they were fake. Misinformation and rumors about the mine grew so common that in 1895, they had made it to the San Francisco Chronicle. The story is made up of an assortment of hints about the mine's location. It's a near 1,000-foot-tall rock tower. It's near a cabin in a cave. Today, we might expect more detail, but back in those days, the story was enough to fatally pique the curiosity of an amateur prospector, Adolf Ruth. Ruth was an amateur prospector in that he had never found gold, but had been seeking it for years. He and his son searched California's Borrego Desert for gold, but they found none. Ruth injured his leg so severely in the process that he had developed a lifelong limp. But when his son, who worked in Mexico, found a map that might lead to an Arizona gold mine, Ruth couldn't resist. At age 66, he went into the Superstition Mountains alone, over the objections of his son and his family. Just one day into his journey, he disappeared. But Ruth did indeed find the lost Dutchman, according to a message in a bottle. In 1932, campers found a note in a bottle bobbing in Arizona's Salt River. It's one of the mine's few concrete objects, and it read, "I'm sitting under a tree in a creek with my leg broken. I've got to have help quickly. Finder of this note, please give to Howard Peterson. P.S. Found the lost Dutchman, Ruth." Unfortunately, Ruth was dead by the time the note was found. His body and supplies were found in the mountains. The mine was, of course, not, though the area near his corpse was intensively searched. A medical examiner ruled that Ruth died of natural causes, but some maintained that he was murdered because he knew too much about the legendary mine. Robert Blair wrote, "There have been at least four legendary Lost Dutchman's gold mines in the American West, including the famed Superstition Mine of Jacob Waltz. One Lost Dutchman's mine is said to be in Colorado, another in California. Two are said to be located in Arizona. Tales of these other Lost Dutchman's mines can be traced back to at least the 1870s. The earliest Lost Dutchman mine in Arizona has said to have been near Wickenburg, about 110 miles northwest of the Superstition Mountains. A Dutchman was allegedly discovered dead in the desert near Wickenburg in the 1870s, alongside saddlebags filled with gold. Blair suggested that fragments of this legend have perhaps become attached to the mythical mine of Jacob Waltz. In this story, members of the Apache tribe are said to have a very rich gold mine located in the Superstition Mountains. Famed Apache Geronimo is sometimes mentioned with this story. In most variants of the story, the family of a man called Miguel Peralta discovered the mine and began mining the gold there, only to be attacked or massacred by the Apaches in about 1850 in the supposed Peralta Massacre. Years later, a man called Dr. Thorne treated an ailing or wounded Apache and was rewarded with a trip to a very rich gold mine. He was blindfolded and taken there by a circuitous route and is allowed to take as much gold ore as he can carry, before again being escorted blindfolded from the site by the Apaches. Thorne is said to be either unwilling or unable to relocate the mine, most likely because Pedro de Peralta had been the Spanish governor of New Mexico in the 1600s. His family name, Peralta, was the inspiration for several legends in the American Southwest. James Ravis tried to assert that to the Peralta family, and he said that they had a Spanish land grant and a barony granted by the King of Spain, which included a huge swath of Arizona and New Mexico, including the Superstition Mountains. The massacre is a legend that Apaches supposedly ambushed a mining expedition that the Peralta family sent into the mountains. Some carved stones in the area are referred to as the Peralta Stones, and Spanish text and crude maps on them are considered by them and some to be clues to the location of a Peralta family gold mine in the Superstition Mountains, although others believe the stones to be modern fakes. Historical records leaves uncertainty as to whether a Peralta family ever had possession of the land or mines in or near the Superstition Mountains. Blair insisted that the Peralta portion of the story is unreliable, writing, "The operation of a gold mine in the Superstitions by a Peralta family is a contrivance of 20th century writers." A man named Miguel Peralta and his family did operate a successful mine in the 1860s. According to Blair, the origin of the story can be traced to a doctor named Thorne, who was in a private practice in New Mexico in the 1860s. Thorne claimed that he was taken captive by the Navajos in 1854, and that during his captivity, he discovered a rich gold vein. Thorne related his claims to three U.S. soldiers in about 1858. The three soldiers set out to find the gold, but without success. For the decades, this tale was gradually absorbed into the Lost Dutchman story. The consensus among geologists is that the Superstition Mountains are unlikely to contain a secret gold mine. However, the Lost Dutchman gold mine remains much discussed in Arizona. Several trails throughout the Superstition Wilderness reference the mythical mine. There's a Treasure Loop Trail, the Peralta Trail, and the Dutchman's Trail. There's even a museum exhibit about the mine in the area, which tasks itself with the separation of fact, fitting for a mine that's right on the border between mythical and real. So far. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Legend. Please subscribe and leave us a review below. Sponsorships are wanted. Contact at thenewcampfirepodcast@gmail.com. This show was written and produced by me, Rishu Sheth. Stay safe and at home, and as always, thanks for listening. Baruth did indeed find the lost Dutchman, according to a message in a bottle.